Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Clint Sterner and Lock Dog today. Lock Dog's with us, y'all. Saddle up, buckle up. It's 2 o'clock. We got you till 6 o'clock. Lock Dog, appreciate you jumping in for my man today.
Hey, we're off to a rough start, though, Clint, because I'm doing radio with you, and I get introduced to you by you bringing fish in the studio. That's a no-no. You got fish in the studio, so hey. we're already off to a bad start.
Mm-mm, I've been watching you on social media, man. You're out there working out. You're out there getting right, fighting Father Time. I think you're getting ready for the summer by the pool. Summer's by the pool, but nonetheless, I know you'd appreciate some good healthy cooking, my man.
Very much so. And I'm actually looking forward to, as many of us are, the return of sports. It's been a rough time. Fingers crossed. Going to have the Rockets by the end of the week. Going to have the Texans reporting for camp by the 23rd. And the best team in town, maybe the best array of talent we've ever seen in this city, the Houston Astros are going to be back on the field in 17 days. The schedule comes out yesterday. A lot of times when an MLB schedule comes out, it's oh-hum. You pretty much have an idea of what's going on. This year's a little bit more, a little bit different, though, Clint, because you're only going to have the 60 games. It's going to be a different type of travel schedule. It's a whole different format. And you're going to only have 8 Astros games outside of the state of Texas and California. You're going to get a few matchups with the Los Angeles Dodgers. When you got to peep this schedule of the best team in town returning to the field, what stood out the most to you when it came to the Astros getting back out there?
Well, I think there's several things. Locke almost called you show right out of the gate, baby. There's several things, man. I think that you got 6 consecutive games out of the gate. And number 5 and number 6, they happen to be against who I think the Astros, at least in the clubhouse, want to just absolutely annihilate more than any other team on the planet right now versus the Dodgers. So game 5 and 6 versus the Dodgers in a shortened season in 6 consecutive games with, the history that those between these two organizations, obviously immediately in my mind, it goes to the 5-man rotation thought is scary for the Astros. They start with 6 straight. They finish with 13 straight games without rest. Rotation depth will be an absolute must. It'll be important. And that 5-man rotation with Urquidy not here and with Josh James not in spring training right now, that concerned me big time. Out of the gate, the consecutive games, which you knew was going to happen because you're squeezing 60 games into a short period of time. But, boy, when you break this thing down, out of the gate, you get Astros in game 5 and 6 versus the Dodgers after a 4-game stretch with the Mariners. That could be problematic out of the gate.
Yeah, and I think the person to keep an eye on is Zach Greinke. If we're talking about the rotation, because it's one thing not to report to spring training during a normal year like he did before we knew that this was going to happen, the corona and everything, but I mean, damn, we got 17 days till the season starts. We don't really know what he's been doing. We know how bizarre of an individual Zach Greinke is. He's made $250 million. I don't want to make an assumption, but it just does seem like if anyone's going to opt out for the Astros, and we see guys opting out every single day, it seems like that would be one of the guys that I would keep my eyes on and see until he's there, the possibility is alive for me.
It's and real, yeah.
If he does opt out, I mean, you're talking about this. This Astros team goes from a team that's one of the top 3 in the league to just in the mix of a very, very good team. I need to see Greinke there before I feel 100% confident in the Stros.
Yeah, our guy Dusty Baker is from a distance trying to figure out what the rotation is going to look like, and he's concerned about the young cats not being here, the back end of that rotation not being here, and Greinke's out here playing games when he's going to return on his own schedule. That's a typical Greinke thing, though. Do you feel like at this point in time that Greinke is seriously contemplating not coming, or do you think it's just the typical he's on his own schedule, he's working out on his own, he believes in what he believes in, and he's committed to it?
I think they said that he's sprinting at Minute Maid, which is weird because he's there's live batting practice going on and he's not going. So I just don't know. I don't know what to think about Greinke. Dusty Baker was asked how he looks, and this is what Dusty Baker said: Greinke is Greinke. Like, that's what, like, what does that mean? It's like Manny being Manny type thing.
He said the same thing in spring training 1.0, didn't he? And that when he's asked when Greinke was coming, and that's the same thing he said initially in when they were in Florida in spring training the first go around. So not the first time Dusty Baker's had to deal with the Greinke, the awkwardness of Greinke. The other thing, other than the consecutive games to start the season, the workload of consecutive games throughout the season, and then the Astros finishing with 13 straight, I mean, those are things that stuck out, and obviously the rotation was a big part of that. The travel is going to be an absolute monster. 40% of the 60 games will be in Arizona, Washington, or Cali. Arizona, Washington, or Cali. I mean, that's 40% of your games are – of the 60 games are in states that are good flights away from Houston. I mean longer flights than normal away from Houston. 7 out of the 10 games versus the A's are going to be in Oakland. 6 out of the 10 games versus the Angels are going to be in Anaheim.
A lot of Texas, I mean, just, and Cali for them. A lot of Texas and Cali. I think 8 games outside of Texas and Cali is what I saw. So they're actually going to be in these two states. So I don't think the travel is going to be that bad. I think the travel actually might shape up for them pretty nicely.
Well, I think from the amount of travel, I'm speaking more of when they do travel, it's a monster flight. It's not Boston to New York. I mean, it's a monster flight when you're playing that many games in Oakland and that many games in Anaheim. And so I just think travel is going to be a problem. Generally speaking, when you cram that many games into a short period of time, obviously travel's gonna be magnified times 10. But you do it in a sense of the Astros having to go to California so often, I think could be a big problem.
Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley along with Clint Sterner here on Sports Radio 610. The other thing that stuck out here, and this is something that kind of irked me yesterday. You know, sometimes it doesn't take much to irk me, Clint, but there was some news that the Astros, when the schedule came out, that there's going to be more late starts. There's some 8-10 games or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing people on the internet that have gone through this sportless time, 3-plus months. We're 251 days removed from the Astros losing in the World Series to the Nationals. Opening day was supposed to happen. We were supposed to be out there at the juice box, drinking beer, having a good time 103 days ago, Clint.
Yep.
And we got people whining that there might be some late starts for the Houston Astros. That is one of the most ridiculous, ungrateful things I've ever seen in my life.
I saw your tweet yesterday. I thought it was great, man. I thought that initially, like when we initially started talking about kicking the season back off and there being so many West Coast games. I think that first started when they had the 10-team divisions and the Astros were going to have to head west consistently more often than normal, I guess. So the late games was a problem. I agree with you. When it was immediate, I said, you know what? My crew don't give a damn if they start at 10, at 11. They're going to be up watching the Astros regardless. And now you add to the fact that they've had no live sports outside of NASCAR and golf for the last couple of weeks, but no live sports for such a long period of time, that crying over when
1 hour?
Yeah, come on, man. I mean, I don't care. I don't care if it's 2 or 3 hours. I mean, they're going to be there. They're going to be watching. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's silly to complain about the start times.
I'm just glad that they're back on the field. It's going to be interesting. Of course, every position player was there today, so everyone except Yordan Alvarez, which I don't even really consider him a position player. That's a DH right there. That's my DH. That's big Yordan. Context clues tell you he might have the Rona, so They got to keep him away. And the test results are in. This is the other thing, Clint. MLB needs to get their crap together, because yesterday when the Astros canceled their workout, I think naturally people kind of hesitate and they panic because they're like, oh my gosh, what happened? Who tested positive? They were just waiting for the damn results.
Waiting for the results, yeah.
MLB, come on. Like, you got to get the results in. Like, this, that should not be something that catches you by surprise. These results got to be quick, got to be very quick. It's got to happen. You got to get on top of it.
Well, it's a terrible look for Major League Baseball, Locke. After what they did with negotiating so publicly and then negotiating poorly in the public eye, on the backside of that, the one thing that you couldn't have hit you in the forehead would be testing and the process of getting the results back in a timely fashion. That couldn't be a problem within the first week of players returning. I mean, there, you knew there were going to be guys that tested positive, but the process being flawed immediately out of the gate to a point where last I saw there were three teams, right? The Nationals, the A's, and the Astros had to cancel their workouts yesterday.
Yes.
I don't know if there were more teams than that or not, but the fact that three teams in less than, what was that, 4 or 5 days into the players returning, they're canceling workouts, not because of positive tests, but because
no results.
The results aren't getting back in a timely fashion to where they feel like they're executing and the work environment is safe. That's a bad, bad look for Major League Baseball. They've got to be better.
What the hell are we going to do when the games are on? Like, let's just put ourselves in the, because you're a man of the people. That's why me and Clint Sterner get along. You are a man of the people. It don't matter if it's a dive scene. You can dress up nicely and go out there too. What the hell are we going to do when these games come back on? Because there's going to be no bars open. But they're going to be right there at the juice box with no fans. What do you got to do? You just got to go close out the restaurant bar. They're closing at 9, Clint.
This is a time. Do they have to close at 9?
I think restaurants have to close at 9. I don't know if they have to. I think they will, right?
We can push the limit until 10. Maybe we can catch most of the Astros game. Yeah, now's the time to be in the restaurant bar business. But I mean, that percentage cutoff needs to be 51% food and 49% alcohol right now. That's the business to be in. But yeah, Sean, if you hit me up when I leave here at 6 p.m., and I got an open schedule, and the Stros are playing, I'll meet you wherever you want to go to watch the games, as long as they'll let us.
You know what's going to be crazy, and this is looking way ahead, Clint. This is nuts. So whenever the Astros are playing, they're going to be playing at night, 90% of the time.
Okay.
The NBA games are going to be going from like 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. So you're going to have – we've gone sportless for a long time. There's going to be days where, hell, on the TV screen, on the slab, there's going to be – basketball games from 11 till night, and then you're going to be able to sprinkle in the Astros.
Come on, man.
We're going to get our fix.
Come on, man.
We're going to get our fix, Clint.
Locke, and I hope this holds up, the Masters weekend, recall it off the top of your head? Is it Texans, Cowboys, Masters final?
It's right there in the mix of an NFL Sunday. I want to say it's when the Texans face the Browns, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but I think it's Texans play at noon, Cowboys play at 3, and then there's also the final round of the Masters going on. Something along those lines right there. That's Masters Sunday coming down the pipe in a couple of months.
Those are the days we need.
Oh, my God.
Those are the days we need.
Coach, very rarely, I'm going to be honest, anytime do I ever just sit and put my toes up all day long and watch sports. I got to get up, move around a little bit, give me a workout in, mow the yard, something. Hey, man, that might be one of them days that I just say, hey, baby, can we get breakfast, lunch, and dinner on the couch, served over here on the couch on the coffee table? Is that possible? That's a big day, man.
Yeah, it is. It is Texans, Browns. Appreciate Bridget for letting me know that. Mow the lawn, huh? That's interesting, Clint.
I'm a lawn guy, bro. I love mowing the lawn.
Okay, I see you.
I'm a lawn guy.
I see you.
Exercise, sweat, tan.
Okay.
Feel like you're pulling your weight at the house?
There you go. You go shirtless so that you can get some looks from the neighbors, too?
Yes. There you go. Yeah, shirtless. Work boots.
There you go.
Shirtless shorts and work boots.
Now you're just getting a little too
Baytown. Camo work boots, actually.
Now that's a little too Baytown for me. I'm going to stay in the city. Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley, along with Clint Sterner. Deshaun Watson, things are going to change in year 4. He's laying out demands for his boss, and he says that he might have been a little bit passive in the beginning. We'll hear from Deshaun Watson next. Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley here on Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner holding it down. Clint.
Yeah, baby.
Big year for Deshaun Watson, year 4. obviously got to be interesting for Deshaun to see Pat Mahomes, who was drafted two spots ahead of him, get that big money, that record-setting money yesterday. We got to wonder, you know, what's next for Deshaun. You also got to wonder if he's going to take that next step that many of us expect to take, because for the last couple seasons, he's watched Lamar Jackson win an MVP. He's watched Pat Mahomes win an MVP and a Super Bowl. And we in Houston, who've been starving for a quarterback, have been pleased with what we've seen the last 3 years. We often get greedy because, yes, this is probably the best quarterback play we've seen for 3 years in H-Town, but you also want to see that next step get taken.
Yeah, it has to happen. I mean, here's the deal, is that we've talked to her blue in the face about the fact that Deshaun Watson hasn't necessarily been surrounded by a scheme that's a perfect fit, and he hasn't the head coach, offensive coordinator, offensive-minded head coach, however you want to spin it, the offensive minds for the Texans have not wrapped this offense just nice and neat around Deshaun Watson the way that I will argue Andy Reid did with Pat Mahomes, and no doubt about it, the way that Greg Roman and Harbaugh and Baltimore did with Lamar Jackson. We've talked about that till we're blue in the face, and I'll be gladly have that conversation anytime anybody wants to, and we can get way off in the weeds on scheme and anything else. But when it's all said and done, the great ones, Landry, the great ones find a way to make it happen with the guys that are scheming, creating plays, and calling plays. There's no doubt about it, Deshaun Watson has a talent around him. He's had talent around him, at least at the skill positions. There's the talent this year is going to be better than it's ever been across the board with a Texans team that Deshaun Watson was taking snaps with. He's got to find a way to make it work, not hope it works. And he's got to find a way to take the bull by the horns with Tim Kelly and Bill O'Brien and anybody else involved in the process. He's got to find the way to make it work, brother.
The frustrating thing for me is it just seems like everything that he can control, outside of maybe some pre-snap recognition, which we can also get into, but everything that he can control, it seems like he has it under control, and he does everything that you could expect him to do, whether it's the mental part of the game, whether it's the physical part of the game, whether it's the intangibles. It just seems like a lot of the reasons, a lot of the frustration that Deshaun hasn't taken that next step is because of stuff that he can't control. And as a quarterback, you're not always in control of the situations. He didn't pick what situation he came into. That's what's frustrating. But I was encouraged by what I heard from him with Carmelo Anthony in the What's in Your Glass podcast yesterday, which was put out on YouTube, specifically his new mindset. Listen to what Deshaun had to say about his new mindset in year four and how it's going to be different from the first 3 years.
I'm at that point in my career going in year four, and I've done enough and put the pellets on the wall. I'm confident enough in who I am as a person and what I can do on the field and back it up, and also carry myself off the field in a respectful and good manner where I can be myself. I don't actually need to step out of my lane to try to be somebody else because somebody else is looking at me differently. Now, if you like me for who I am, then you're going to like me. I'm learning and I'm growing to, like, everywhere I go, I'm going to carry myself the way I need to carry myself that I'm comfortable in because I am who I am.
That just sounds like kind of taking the next step. I don't want to use the word passive, but maybe he's a little bit more aggressive looking forward and realizing that it's time to kick it up. It's time to take it up a notch. You can stay in the league if you're Deshaun Watson doing what you've been doing, but you got to kick it up a notch. And a lot of that comes mentally taking that next step, kind of finding yourself.
Yeah, like, when I hear that, I love the whole, you know, I've made plays in this league, I know I belong. There's a certain level of respect that he's earned. And I think when he says that, he's not just talking about other players in the league. He's not just talking about Pro Bowls and things of that nature. I think a lot of it has to do with he's earned the right to quote unquote take the bull by the horns, and at least I hope that's what he's talking about is that now, and I think it's the right thing to do. As you come into the league, you don't know when you come into the league how the staff and how the organization, at least on the offensive side of the football, is going to operate with you taking the snaps, and he's had enough experience at this point to understand what the Houston Texans, what the dynamic is of the Houston Texans offensively. And now there's no excuse for him not to take control of what the hell they're doing and eliminate the, hey, we're going to protect the quarterback in certain games, or we're going to protect the quarterback throughout the season, or we're going to run certain offenses and certain schemes, that's going to be our identity. He's got to dictate that. He's got to determine those things. And I think he's done enough at this point in time to verbalize that and be very vocal about what it is he wants to do moving forward.
Landry Locker with Clint Sterner in for Ron the Show Hughley here on Sports Radio 610. Here's more from Deshaun about why he's comfortable and confident that he's going to take that next step. And what did it take for him to get to this point? Here's Deshaun with Carmelo Anthony talking about that.
Learn the history about the game. Learn the history about the game. Get educated with that. Build your knowledge and be able to be comfortable with the person you are today. And the person you are. It took me 3 years into the NFL to actually realize, okay, this is the person I am. This is how I like to dress. This is how I like to talk. You know what I'm saying? To be comfortable with that. If you can have that energy and that confidence and know the history, because you don't want to come in not knowing the history and you're stepping over boundaries and now you're looking crazy. That's why I've been quiet. And I feel like this is the perfect opportunity for guys to be able to learn and educate themselves. So whenever you get to that moment, you won't feel the pressure that most guys felt, you know, coming into the lead and feeling like you got to, you know, be a certain way to make sure you stay in the lead.
I mean, it's his locker room, right? I mean, it's when he admittedly, when you hear the guy himself, because we can make the assumptions all we want about Hopkins being gone. And, you know, now Deshaun is the biggest voice in the locker room. When the franchise quarterback openly comes out, Clint, and says, "I've been quiet," and he talks about now he's ready to take that next step. Make no mistake about it. It might have been before, but this is undeniably his locker room now.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, when I hear guys talking, I love to hear these kind of things, one-offs on podcasts and things of that nature, outside of being on the podium after a game. Because I just you've heard me say it a million times. Like, I think it's almost unfair to put these players, they're wired so tight and so highly strong during a game, to just throw them up on a podium after a game, I think is not always the best idea. Deshaun handles it really, really well. But at this point, you could tell he was always calculated up there. I love hearing stuff like this because he's letting his hair down, and you can genuinely and sincerely hear him answering questions quickly and to the point. And a lot of times it goes back to a lot of stuff Carlos Correa said Friday. He's not afraid to talk about and speak for the group and speak about his future and what he's going to do in the future. And so I think that it's very telling what Deshaun's talking about and what the next step is, and that he's ready to take it.
Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley with Clint Sterner. I think this is, and I'm guilty of this, I think we all are to a certain point. I think with the responsibility that comes with being a professional athlete and you're in charge of a lot of people's emotions, hell, some people don't even want to talk to anyone for a week after the Texans lose. I think a lot of times we kind of forget, and I'm lumping myself in there with the we forget that just because these young men have more responsibility than most men will ever have in their life and more pressure doesn't mean they're men. Like, you're still a kid when you're 21 years old and you come in the NFL. And if you just look back at yourself at 21 to 25 or whatever,
there is a crazy amount of ignorance. Yeah, is the right word. And I don't mean that negatively. I just mean that you don't know.
Natural.
Right.
It's natural. Yes. And I think Deshaun is having that. This was the most telling thing, though, Clint. And this is where you talk about a franchise quarterback throwing his weight around. So it's one thing for Deshaun to talk about what goes on the field and what goes on in the locker room. But when you start laying out expectations for your boss and your owner, like Deshaun did with Carmelo Anthony, I think this is where you see that this is going to be the face of the franchise. And if things aren't going the way that he likes them to go, Deshaun's not just going to cruise by. He's going to be more vocal. This was him talking about what he expects from Cal McNair whenever training camp begins, hopefully at the end of the month.
Do you find it uncomfortable for those owners to be able to talk about that and to discuss it with the players or not?
I think it's going to be uncomfortable. I personally haven't talked to our owner. I talked to the head coach. I talked to Jack Easterby. I talked to the main guys that, you know, deal with the players and deal with the front office. But I personally haven't talked to the owner. But I know whenever, you know, we report the camp, everybody in that locker room is expecting the owner on day one to come talk to us and communicate with us. Ask us questions. Let them know that, hey, you know, he's there supporting us. He's supporting his players. Because if not, then it's going to be some issues for sure.
There you go. There you go.
And look, but he's speaking the truth. I mean, it's just so it's so to the point, and it's so confident, and it's different than what we've heard. Now, that may be because, you know, our country's going through something right now where really Deshaun Watson has lived a lot of it in his upbringing, and he as maybe he's in a calculated mindset made his mind up that he was going to be a bigger voice, especially in the city of Houston, if not across the NFL landscape. And it all starts right here in his locker room. So again, the confidence just exudes. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just, it's crazy the difference in hearing him speak now versus a year ago.
I feel like I'm watching my son grow up right there. So it just brings a tear to my eye hearing Deshaun like this. And my gosh, he's about to be a rich man. We don't know if it's going to be a short-term rich or a long-term rich, but he is definitely going to be rich. Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley with Clint Sterner. The Rockets, they're going to return to the court in less than a month. Could they make a championship run? We're going to talk to someone who has been a part of a championship team. Brian Scalabrine joins the show next. Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley. Rockets, about a month away from starting their season, they're going to be in that vaunted Orlando bubble. Brian Scalabrine, Radio.com insider, joins us right now, former NBA champ, also known as the Red Mamba. Brian, if you were getting ready for what the Rockets are about to get ready for, how nervous would you be, and would you consider opting out like some of the other players in the league have elected to do?
No way, especially if I was where the Rockets are at. I think there's about maybe 10 teams that can win it all. Maybe 8 teams that can win it all, because you never know what's going to happen in this environment. Obviously, there are favorites, but I put the Rockets in that conversation. I would feel equally guilty, especially if I was a rotational player and I opted out and my team lost. And I'd also feel like I didn't deserve it if I opted out and my team won. So to me, there's a divide. There are teams where no one's talking about or even looking at like an option, and they're like, no, this is a good opportunity for us to win a championship. We got to go down there and treat this. This is going to be tough. We're going to treat this like we're trying to win it. And then there's the other team that you can just tell they're checked out. Now, I wish the NBA would have kind of took a pulse on the teams, because there's a lot of teams that doesn't even seem like they want to be down there.
Brian, what about one guy that opted in that I think a lot of people thought had one leg out of the gate was Dwight Howard, and you know, he's opted in for the Lakers, at least as of today he has. And we had Kendrick Perkins on not too long ago, man, and him and I had a good conversation about, I mean, this guy, this is before the pandemic hit, obviously, and this guy had, I mean, he had somewhat resurrected his career and was a key part of what the Lakers do. And in terms of the Rockets, he was causing problems for the Rockets. And so this, hearing Dwight Howard has opted in, I think is a big topic here in Houston. How do you think him being in the tournament, in Bubble Town, how do you think that impacts the Lakers and, more importantly, the Rockets?
Yeah, I mean, Dwight Howard has been unbelievable this year. He got his body right. I know he's been hurt. Even when he was in Houston, he was hurt. You know, he really wasn't the same in L.A. or Houston. And for whatever reason this year, you know, LeBron does this to guys a lot. They play him 18 to 22 minutes. He plays hard as heck when he's out there. And I think it's an advantage. And I always thought, like, to win it all, you need as many tools in the belt as you can. And Dwight Howard definitely provides something. Whether the Lakers go small with Anthony Davis at the five or Dwight Howard is out there, you know, either way, it just gives you a better chance of winning it all. So if he would have opted out, I'm not picking the Lakers to win it. I'm picking the Clippers to win it all. But if he would have opted out, there's no way that I would even give them a chance, especially with Avery Bradley out, Dwight Howard out. I don't know how they would have a chance to win without Dwight Howard being a key piece. And just think about it. They got him off the scrap heap. And a lot of teams have opportunity to take him. They passed on him. And LeBron, the Lakers, are really making the most of him.
Brian, do you see them on that same topic with Dwight Howard? Because the way I look at it is they've got two guys that can play the five, really three with McGee, that can play the five, and all three of them aren't your typical Jokic. That's a typical big-bodied center that lumbers around the floor and doesn't like to extend to the to the perimeter to defend. I mean, all three of those guys are more athletic than most big men are, at least the old school big men. Do you see them being able to play those big – obviously, AD will be on the floor – being able to play a bigger lineup than most because of that athleticism, or do you still see that being – the perimeter defense being a problem for the Lakers?
Yeah, I do see the perimeter defense being a problem with Avery Bradley opting out of this. But I will say this. When LeBron James is playing point guard, I mean, we can call him a small forward if you want, but he brings the ball up the court when he's on the floor, 75% of the time. So just when your point guard is 6'9", 260 pounds, and a freak of nature, that makes you a big team. It gives you the versatility to play different ways. Now, you mentioned those guys are extremely athletic, which gives them the ability to switch out onto guards, which limits rotation and all that stuff. So, yeah, the Lakers are massive, especially when they go Anthony Davis at the four. But, I still think it's a guard-driven league. The hand checks and all that stuff. The Lakers are beatable if you drive the basketball, if you can get inside the paint. So you're looking at teams that attack the rim. Those are the teams that the Lakers are going to have a really hard time with. You're looking at teams that are deep in the guard position that can come in with guys off the bench that can score. Those are the teams that the Lakers are going to have troubles with. But no matter what troubles you're going to have defensively, you're still going to have to deal with LeBron and that team on the other end of the floor. And you mentioned those guys like Howard and McGee and even Anthony Davis. All those guys can screen, dive to the rim, and LeBron could throw it up and over the defense or kick it out to a guy for three. So because they have LeBron, everyone's is put in a position where they have probably the best chance of succeeding.
Talking to Brian Scalabrini here with Clint Sterner, Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley. You've got a unique experience because your championship ring, you were with three guys in their 30s that needed that piece of jewelry to basically, I don't want to say justify, but you put the exclamation mark on their historic careers, KG, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. James Harden's looking for that exact same piece of jewelry, but there's some – Even some of the most respected NBA analysts, Jeff Van Gundy talked to us last week and was talking about how he doesn't even consider this the continuation of the league. He considers it summer league. If a guy like James Harden wins a ring, how much would you, when you talk about him historically, how much would you maybe not put an asterisk on it, but question this ring compared to others? Are all rings equal in this situation?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, whoever wins it from an individual standpoint, I won't take that away. I really won't. I'm not taking Kawhi Leonard's ring away last year because Kevin Durant got hurt. And if Kevin Durant played, I really believe the Warriors would have beat the Toronto Raptors. But individuals, no matter what, it goes on your trophy shelf. Like that, if James Harden does get a ring, no one's going to say it was during quarantine. I mean, maybe people will say that because there's just like this general hate for James Harden outside of Houston, or maybe, like it just seems like people don't love James Harden, or people either love him or hate him. He seems to be the pun of jokes when you're playing pickup and guy dribbles too much, they call him James Harden. So I think, to me, I'm a big fan of Harden. I think he's a winner. I think that he's got put in situations where, not the best situation to win, and losing to the Warriors is no slouch. I mean, it doesn't mean you're having a bad season or anything like that. Losing to the Warriors, they're a really good team. So if he has a no-show playoff performance again, even if it's in the bubble and everything like that, and he looks like he's in great shape, then people can start continuing those conversations. But if he wins it all, I'm going to give him his due because I think it's going to be hard. First of all, to stay coronavirus free, and it's also going to be hard to stay injury free. And the guys who do are probably the guys who spent the time during the off season, whatever they did. I don't care if they snuck into a gym without a mask or everything because they wanted to win a championship and they didn't get caught, then so be it. I don't care if they did that. So if James Harden made that commitment, because look, his body's in great shape, he's making that commitment, then I'm cool with what he did, because it's not easy to win a championship.
You've been up close for some of the best playoff matchups and the best environments. I mean, playing in Boston during the playoffs, it's second to none. Do you think that there are some guys like LeBron James, like Kawhi Leonard, maybe like some of your former teammates, that It's almost like a drug, and you get an extra gear when the atmosphere is like that. And on the flip side, if there are guys like, let's say, James Harden, being to be fair, that kind of have crumbled in that situation, do you think maybe it could have a negative impact on guys like Kawhi and LeBron because they don't have that extra rush, and guys like Harden who've maybe come up short could kick it up another notch when it's not the traditional atmosphere that they're used to?
Yeah, so the way I look at the no fans is I feel like there would be a lot more people with poise. So when you think about guys, when they go on the road in a hostile environment, I mean, right now, I think, and I'm not trying to be like a old guy on my front porch, but I think back in the day, I think there were a lot more guys that lived for that, the Reggie Millers of the world, the Michael Jordans of the world. I think there were more guys like that. In the league now, and you could tell, do you remember, I think it was 2 years ago, you remember in the Eastern Conference 2 years ago how it was 20-point blowouts over and over again for the home team, and for whatever reason, it seems like the league, and I'm not like trying to like disrespect the league at all, but it feels like the league has a lot more front runners now than it did, you know, way back when everything was a dogfight. I played with a guy, Jason Kidd. He loved being on the road. Paul Pierce loved being on the road. I don't know if there's a lot of guys like that right now. And I bring that up because, like, LeBron, he has no problem going on the road. I mean, the guy went into Oracle, Game 7, NBA Finals, and got a win, right? So he has no problem with it. I think in this environment, there's going to be, all right, let's say, forget the first round. We'll just throw that out. We got eight teams left. Of those guys, you got 64 players that are really playing. I'm going to give like 20 guys are going to be poised in this environment. So LeBron's advantage, so superstar's advantage of being calm, cool, collected on the road, I think that goes away a little bit. So that's why I think it opens up, you know, the possibility of everybody winning. Like Westbrook in Houston, he's one of them. He's had his fair share of struggles on the road when he was in Oklahoma City, and they had a chance to close out the Warriors. They didn't. They kind of melted. Like the pressure, I think all that pressure goes away. I don't think there's nearly as much pressure when you're in the bubble and no fans than there is when you have fans.
Brian, while you're on that real quick, man, I was always of the belief that James Harden just shrunk in the bigger moments. To this point in his career, in the bigger moments when he had opportunities to take over games, for whatever reason, he shrunk in those moments. We had a lot of conversations. Landry Locker, who's with me today, we've had a lot of conversations about, man, he was gassed at a certain extent, and he was carrying too much of the load. When you look at Harden in the past in terms of not being able to get over that hump and get that championship or get to the championship, do you see it as, man, he ran out of gas, there wasn't enough tread on the tire to get through the season, or is it just, has the moment just been too big?
No, I'm of the latter. Like, not, I'm sorry, I'm of the belief that he pushed for the MVP, he pushes for stats, he pushes for leading the league. I think this year he didn't care. I thought he got to a point where he sort of like let Russell do his thing. Remember the start of the year, he was like absolutely dominating, almost averaging 40 points a game. And then he's just like, you know what? I'm not going to do that this year. I've done it in the past. What does it matter? It doesn't matter if I lose in the second round, if I average 40 points a game. Like, it's just, I need to win. And I think those years in the past, just look at his games played, 81, 80, 82, all those kind of things. He doesn't take, there's no load management for him. You know, so I just feel like when you're in that environment over the course of the season and you get into an environment like the San Antonio game where he had to guard LaMarcus Aldridge, and I just think he's absolutely gassed. And when you're a skilled player, like, remember, everybody is gassed when they're out there. But the dudes that can turn the corner and get to the rack and get layups, that's not going away whether you're gassed or not. You know what goes away? The hesitation, step back, dribble. That just doesn't feel right when you're on tilt or you're gassed. So I think James Harden has pushed so hard during the regular season that he gets into the environment in just a matter of time before he sort of just runs out of gas. Now, listen, some people can do it, but like, I'm going to point to LeBron. LeBron doesn't push that hard during the regular season. He gets great stats, but if you watch him play, watch him play when he's it's hard now because obviously they're going to be heading into the playoffs and it'll be different. But he'll take one dribble and throw it up to Anthony Davis in the post all the way down the floor, and he'll walk into the offense sometimes.
Rec center style. Listen, I call that rec center style. I've been known to do that every once in a while.
Yeah, Yeah, so LeBron does that a lot. And it's like he's so good at conserving energy, playing three-point line to three-point line. But when he goes to the playoffs, he just flips the switch. Like there is no more conserving energy for him. Like, to me, James Harden doesn't ever do that. Like, he's like going to work. This season was the first season that I saw him sort of dial it back. It's like, you know what? I'm going to have my moments. I'm going to go off once in a while, but I'm not going for the MVP. I'm not going for this. I'm not going for that. I'm just trying to be healthy, be rested, be ready to go with the playoffs start. Now, he didn't know that this thing was going to happen and everything like that. But of all the guys who should not run out of gas this year, it will be James Harden. Now, with the no strip clubs and the no women in the bubble, and you talk about the rest that he's got and his body's in shape, I'm high on the Rockets. I just think they're going to surprise teams. And one guy I'm really high on is Gordon, man. Like, Gordon's always hurt. Now, if he's healthy, I'm just high on this team. Like, I feel like they can make noise. And I know if I was in the West and I was playing them, I would not want to play them.
You mentioned it. I was actually going to bring it up. It's not as random now. Brian Scalabrine joining us, radio.com insider. I've been around. I grew up around NBA players. I've talked to some NBA players. Stephen A. Smith brought it up the other day, and it went viral because I think a lot of people were kind of laughing. How hard is it going to be for NBA players to go a month or 3 months without some attention from the ladies?
Well, after the first round, they can bring in somebody. So it's only 8 games in the first round. I know Stephen A. Smith was saying all that, but they're allowed to get people in, you know, after that. They can rent more hotel rooms. Once those other garbage teams are out, and then you have the first-round teams that are out, now they have more hotel rooms, and obviously teams have to pay for it, but it's not 4 months. I know everyone's saying it's 4 months. It's not 4 months. But let's just say it was 4 months, you'll get the best of people and the worst of people, just like all of us. Like, Kimika, if we all, like, went, I don't know, I'd probably be a better person. Some people would be a worse person. It's just not everyone is the same, you know. And I think probably down the middle. If you just start seeing random guys play unbelievable, or, you know, unbelievable players playing, you know, like so subpar, there's a good explanation.
Scout, wait, so you're telling me after the first round they can just call up their old lady and slide them in with old temperature check like they do at the restaurants and stuff nowadays?
Yeah. Like, I mean, they got to do quarantine and they got to go through the procedures of everybody else. But like after the first round, you're allowed to bring people in. And, you know, like single guys, they're importing. We call that an import, the import-export business. So they're going to import some. The only thing is they can't, like, you know, I don't think they can import different, like one a week, you know. It's got to be the same one. So you got to choose wisely.
Scal, I had one when I was playing arena ball, man. My man was married with kids, and he'd bring his girlfriend on the road trips.
Oh.
On the team playing, Chief.
Oh, wait, he's married with kids, and he brought the work.
The girlfriend. I don't know how that would get done in the bubble, but it was one of the damnedest things I've ever seen. I thought, boy, you got a lot of time on your hands, man. Hey.
Someone's going to try. I guarantee you, that's not going to be the first.
That was one of those where we all looked at him like, man, are you serious? Like, is this, are you sure that's not your sister or something just coming along to watch the game? No, it was
putting me in a tough spot there, sir.
Sorry. Hey, we had Mike D'Antoni, Rockets coach. He spoke earlier. And I need you to educate us real quick, man. He spoke. One of the things he made as far as what he would like to find out in this training camp that's coming up is 8, 9, 10 guys. How deep are they going to be? What's the rotation going to look like? Talk us through the difference, which I obviously know the number wise, and you'll be able to keep guys fresh. But 7, 8, 9 guys in a rotation. What's the difference in the 7 versus the 9, and what would that mean if the Rockets can figure out a way to get a solid 9-man rotation rocking and rolling?
Well, let's think about it. So we have the starting 5. You got Austin Rivers, you got Eric Gordon, and you're gonna need another big. So Tyson Chandler will be like the 9th man, give you a couple minutes. So they'll just need, who would be their other big coming off the bench? That would be it, and there, you wouldn't need more than that, especially. When you have 2 superstars and you could stagger their minutes, and I don't know if he brought that up. He said, I just got to make sure I keep Russell Westbrook or Harden on the floor at the same time. So start the game with them, end the game with them, start the half with them. And then the rest of the time, when one guy's resting, the other guy's going to work. And like D'Antoni's been really good about his rotation, and he's got high minute guys. So I know he's saying he's trying to figure that out. He's not going to figure that out in 8 games, but he probably will figure that out. I would say probably after round one or during round one, he's just going to see how am I going to do this? And it probably is determined on the matchups that he has. But when you talk about a playoff rotation, it's usually 8, and the ninth guy is playing, you know, anywhere between 6 minutes if it's no foul trouble, no injuries, no nothing like that, or he's playing 18 minutes if there's foul trouble and stuff like that. But I like the way the Rockets play. It's almost like, listen, you have one guy that could sub in and play 4 positions. And so because of that, flexibility on his part is so much easier. I'll tell you, it's hard playing like 10 minutes a game and being effective. You want guys playing like 18 minutes, you know, 19 minutes. So like, those are the type of numbers you want because you'll get productivity out of guys like that, especially if they know they're going to be in for 18, 19 minutes.
Talking to Brian Scalabrine, less than a month away from the Rockets returning to the court. We're kind of up against it, but I want to get your thoughts on this. It's kind of a nerdy question, but I've been watching the TBT tournament. What do you think of this Elam ending that they've been using? How do you feel about that?
Well, I like that because, you know, like I play in the Big Three and we play to 50. And, you know, like you saw what happened in the All-Star game. So I'm a big fan. You know what I don't like? You know, the controversy on when a guy is allowed to shoot or not shoot at the end of the game. And it always ends with like some kind of fight. You know, like that's like, I don't, NBA players are all friends and everything like that. But if you take a shot and you're up by 18 and there's 46 seconds to go, guys are going to be like, oh, you just don't do that. We got like that. We draw a line in the sand right there. Like, that's where you draw a line in the sand. So the Elam ending gets rid of all that. You still have to play, and you end up playing till the end, which I like. I wish there was more games like that. And by the way, when you guys play pickup, do you ever play for time? Or do you play for, you know, play to 21, play to 11, play to 30, whatever it is?
21 by twos and threes. 21
by twos and threes. We know. We started doing it. I don't know if you're a big Kobe fan. We switched all of our games to 24.
Okay.
24 by twos and threes. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of the ending. And like I said, I play in the Big Three. We play in the 50. So I like that better than just the controversy of who shoots and who doesn't shoot, and then also the free throws at the end of the game. I can't do without that.
You start playing by ones and twos with someone like you shooting out there. That's cheating. That's twice as much.
It's over.
It's not value. Brian, we appreciate you, man, very much, man.
You got it. All right, I'll see you.
Brian Scalabrine, radio.com insider here on Sports Radio 610. Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley. He's a character. He's a damn character. He brought up the sex. I thought I was going to randomly bring it up, but he brought up the sex.
We've had him on, what is that, 3 or 4 times now, and the things that have been in every segment he's joined us is strip clubs and James Harden's performance based off of not being able to attend the strip club.
You don't get your jersey retired at a strip club without slinging it around a little bit. So we'll see if James Harden can go that 3 weeks without it, and then we'll see what he brings in and if the hot streak continues. Landry Locker in for Ron the Show Hughley with Clint Sterner. It is time. It is time for the three-piece, everybody's favorite three-piece in H-Town, the Big Three at three next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.